From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Alligators call North Carolina home, but it's a colder home for them. And until recently, it was considered the northernmost part of their habitat in the United States. We'll find out today whether that's still the case, and we'll explore the implications of human encroachment on alligator habitat, how it's affecting this species, and whether it's posing an increased risk of danger for humans, particularly in light of the June alligator attack at a Disney resort in Florida that killed a two-year-old boy. Earlier this year, the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission rejected a proposal to create an alligator hunting season. While that's not off the table forever, we'll find out why it failed and what a newly formed alligator task force is expected to accomplish. Alan Boynton is a wildlife diversity program coordinator with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. He is also now the chair of that alligator task force. Alan Boynton, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
Kirk Mante is a habitat ecologist specializing in coastal wetlands. Kirk Mante, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
If you have questions for our guests about alligators in North Carolina, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Alan Boynton, how many alligators do experts think there are in North Carolina? And is getting a head count kind of a complicated endeavor here?
Well, getting a head count is a complicated endeavor. However, a couple of years ago, NC State University completed a survey of alligators in North Carolina and counted almost or estimated the population from that survey area as about 900 animals, although we know there's more than that because they are difficult to count.
We think that there are 900 alligators roughly in North Carolina. We think there may be more. Is that what you're saying?
That was in the survey area, and of course, with so many wetlands and so many creeks and rivers in the coastal plain that the alligators inhabit, we are not able to look at every creek and every river, so we know there's more alligators than that. But it was a survey that repeated a survey done about 30 years ago, again by NC State, and found alligators distributed throughout the coastal plain.
And when you compare
the same number.
When you compare it to 30 years ago, how much has the alligator population increased according to that survey?
Well, not a lot. It's at least stable, and perhaps a slight increase.
Kirk Mante, why are alligators difficult to count?
Well, for a lot of the reasons that Alan just said, they tend to, other than the areas like ponds and stormwater areas we tend to see them in frequently, they tend to prefer really remote areas that are dense in their types of kind of preferred food, large turtles, large fish, muskrats and that kind of stuff. And so they tend to hang out in areas where there simply aren't a lot of people, and those are very similar to the nesting areas they choose too.
And what is the northernmost habitat for alligators at this point? What have we established? Is it North Carolina, or are they in Virginia now?
Well, it's a very good question. It's a very contentious topic kind of year to year, especially with the Virginia state government. However, currently and for the last 20 or so years, the northernmost nesting population is in North Carolina, about a dozen miles south of the Virginia border. And that doesn't seem to be changing, at least not at the moment.
So why is it contentious? But people see alligators in Virginia?
Yes. Every summer, in fact, we see alligators in Virginia along the coastal plain. They come up through the Dismal Swamp. They come up through the Intercoastal Waterway. And the Commonwealth of Virginia insists that they're not there, that anything that any alligator that's seen is an accident. And in fact, you know, again, they don't seem to be able to successfully nest that far north, at least at this time. So there's some question as to where exactly these animals are coming from. And as Alan was saying, they're very hard to track.
Alan Boynton of the Alligator Task Force, how do alligators live in North Carolina that certainly doesn't have as harsh a winter as states farther north, but it is a winter? Do they hibernate here?
Well, they become inactive during cold weather. So their season that they can be active and feed is much shorter, particularly in the northeastern part of North Carolina than it is in the Wilmington area. And so they have not as much time to feed actively and don't grow quite as fast as we see alligators in growing in, say, Georgia or Florida, which have a much longer warm period.
So how long does it take for an alligator to reach sexual maturity, the point when an alligator can reproduce, in North Carolina, let's say?
Well, in I think many areas, even to the south, once alligators reach about 6 feet in length, they are large enough to reproduce. But in North Carolina, it can take many years longer for alligators to reach that size than in places to the south. So sometimes maybe even 15 or 20 years, particularly in the northern part of the state.
And so how would you compare that to, say, an alligator in Florida? Is it half the time, roughly, that it takes an alligator to mature in Florida?
Or perhaps a third. I would say between a third and a half the time as an alligator in Florida or Louisiana or, a southern state like Texas.
And I have an email about why people hunt reptiles and why they hunt alligators. But first of all, Alan Boynton, if you could just catch us up on this proposal for an alligator hunting season in North Carolina. Where did that come from and what happened with it? Why did that fail?
Well, there's a great deal of public interest in alligator hunting. States to the south have alligator seasons, and people hear about alligator hunting on media like television or the Internet. So they have come to our commission and asked about an alligator hunting season. We currently don't have one. Last year, our commission considered a proposed rule that would provide for an alligator hunting season. However, we received quite a bit of public comment on it and also took into consideration the recent study by North Carolina State. And we received hundreds of comments, some, supportive, but about 40% were in opposition. And we received many comments from scientific groups that were concerned about the proposal. So,
and what kind of concerns did they express?
Well, the primary concern is that at the northern edge of the range here, with a lower population and perhaps a lower reproductive potential, that hunting, if it was not done correctly, could lower the population and actually cause the disappearance of alligators from some areas of the state. And no one wants that.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the newly formed Alligator Task Force in North Carolina, where and how alligators live, and why we're still learning how to sustainably manage them. With us to answer your questions, Alan Boynton, Wildlife Diversity Program Officer with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. He's also the chair of this new Alligator Task Force. And Kirk Mante, Habitat Ecologist, specializing in coastal wetlands. You can ask a question or make a comment by calling 910-343-1138. You can also reach us today by email at coastline@whqr.org. And Kirk Mante, George asks, what, and this is human psychology, so you may not be able to answer this, but you've been out there in the wetlands and seen the alligators. He asks, what motivates people to hunt reptiles? This is not a mammalian species. Little food value. Is that true? He says, I don't get it. These creatures are our link to the prehistoric times.
Well, that's a very interesting point. They're actually, alligators are one of kind of several very, very old links to very old history of this continent. And however, there is a fair amount of food value in an alligator, largely in the tail. And it's pretty decent meat, depending on what you're your flavor for that kind of stuff is. The big thing, as Alan looks at, and the big thing that the state, the Wildlife Resource Commission's got to look at is, you know, sportsmen, hunters and anglers largely fund conservation efforts in the state and help purchase lands for protection and that kind of stuff. As a result, you know, the state is always going to be interested in understanding what types of activities and what types of hunting they can provide to the citizens, to the taxpayers, that could also generate revenue for the state that's done in a sustainable way. So they, you know, as a hunter myself, I mean, I don't know that it's a species I would pursue myself, but I could see how people would have an interest in it. I have friends who hunt alligators in Florida, and they seem to get quite a lot of enjoyment about it. And again, if it can be done sustainably, it doesn't. There's not a substantial scientific issue with it.
And so, the people that you know that do hunt alligators, what do they do with them?
I would generally say that they make trophies out of the heads, and the tail is butchered for food. So it's substantial, you know, dozens of pounds of meat, if not much, much more.
And there are certain ways that were discussed, and Alan Boynton, we're going to go to break in just a minute, but when we come back, I want to ask you about what would be legal in terms of hunting method. And you've got some pretty strict rules in place around that now, despite the fact there is no hunting season in North Carolina for alligators. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about alligators in North Carolina, why we understand sometimes not so much about them, especially in this northernmost part of their habitat. We have two experts with us today to answer your questions. The phone lines are open. You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline.
Good afternoon. It's 19 minutes after 12. And Coastline continues in just a moment on your public radio station, HQR News 91.3 FM.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and Luna Cafe, locally owned, serving craft coffees, signature lattes like iced vanilla lavender, and homemade cold brews in the Arts and Antiques District on Castle Street in Wilmington. Luna Cafe with two Fs .com and on Facebook. And from Wilmington's own Queensboro Shirt Company, providing custom embroidered apparel since 1982. Visit queensboro.com/WHQR for more information. And from Plantation Village, serving the Wilmington area since its founding in 1988 as a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community. More at plantationvillagerc.com.
Today at Thalian Hall, Cinematique presents the last two screenings of Captain Fantastic, a film about a father devoted to raising his six kids deep in the woods, who is forced to leave his paradise and enter the world. It stars Viggo Mortensen, and you can see it this afternoon at 4 and this evening at 7 at Thalian Hall. Discover more about Cinematique at our website, whqr.org. HQR News Time is 12:20.
You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking about alligators and how to manage them in North Carolina. With us today are two alligator experts. Alan Boynton of the Wildlife Resources Commission is also the chair of the newly formed Alligator Task Force. And Kirk Mante is a habitat ecologist specializing in coastal wetlands. The phone lines are open. If you have a question about alligators in North Carolina, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Alan Boynton, just before we went to break, we were talking about why the hunting proposal failed in North Carolina and why people hunt alligators in the first place. So what are the laws in North Carolina surrounding alligators? Are they a protected species? What is allowed? What is not?
Well, they are. The alligator is a threatened species in North Carolina due to similarity of appearance. And this is because many years ago, back in the late 60s, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the federal government, listed the alligator because of its sharp decline due to changes in habitat that people had caused, and also unregulated hunting. So North Carolina has not allowed any alligator hunting since 1970. The alligator population responded well to protection and increased in many southern states and also increased in North Carolina. And so most states now have an alligator season. It's still closely regulated to sustain the species, but allow some use of the alligators. But we haven't reinstituted a hunting season in North Carolina yet.
And you were explaining, when you were getting comments on the proposal, on the hunting season proposal, that there were a lot of scientists who weighed in and said, we just don't know enough yet about how to manage this species sustainably. Why is that such a head-scratcher? For instance, if you're going to hunt an alligator in other states, does it make sense to kill the older, larger alligators to make room for younger ones? Or does it make sense to kill the younger ones so that the older alpha alligators are able to maintain their dominion in that particular realm? In other words, how do you approach this? Kirk Mante?
Well, that's a good question, and I would look for Alan's input on this too, but from what I understand about the species, over looking at it for about the last 20 years, in the northern end of the range, taking large, reproductively active individuals, in large females especially, in areas where there's not a high population, could be a bit of a dicey proposition because, as Alan mentioned, it could be as long as a dozen, maybe even 20 years before you've got other individuals reaching maturity and laying eggs. So, you know, that's what the Wildlife Resource Commission is looking at closely, to make sure they don't accidentally, you know, allow something that could cause a constriction in the range of alligators in the state.
Alan Boynton, what is the Alligator Task Force hoping to learn about this? What are the missing pieces for scientists from where you sit?
Well, when the commission decided to not adopt this proposal, they told our executive director to set up this task force, and the task force will do a very specific job, and that is to write an alligator management plan for the state. So this will not only consider the research that is needed, but some other things as well. But the research really is to get at exactly what the reproductive potential of alligators is in North Carolina. And we think it is very different in the southeastern portion of the state, New Hanover and Brunswick County, for example, than it is up in Carroll and Dare County at the northeastern end of the alligator nesting area. So we want to look at nests and see what the survival rate of young is, how quickly they grow, and get a better idea of what the population is. And this is so that if we allow alligator harvest, we won't take too many reproductive individuals.
Do alligators continue to reproduce into their golden years? I mean, as long as they're alive, will they reproduce? Do you know?
I think so, although with many animals, including alligator, as they age, their reproductive performance may decline. But alligators are long-lived, so alligators can live 40 or 50 years. And the males get quite a bit larger than the females, so it is possible maybe to harvest larger alligators and therefore avoid many of the females.
Does temperature, climate have anything to do with the gender of alligators and which gender tends to survive better or reproduce more rapidly? Kirk Mante?
Yeah, there actually is quite a difference in temperature, and one of the reasons that alligators build the nests they do is to buffer that temperature. There are instances, especially with long-term weather patterns during or medium-term weather patterns during nesting, when you may get an all-male or all-female nest. But generally speaking, just a few degrees of change inside the nesting area usually results in a mix of male and female offspring. But that's the big determinant, in fact, is the temperature of the nest. And so that's one reason why folks like Alan's group will use things like nest surveys to figure out. You know, the alligators build these big, essentially compost mounds to make sure that they have a well-regulated temperature. But you know, just a little bit of change gives you a diversity of genders in there.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the Alligator Task Force in North Carolina, where and how alligators live, and why we're still learning how to sustainably manage them. With us to answer your questions, Kirk Mante, habitat ecologist specializing in coastal wetlands, and Alan Boynton, Wildlife Diversity Program Officer with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. He's also the chair of the newly formed Alligator Task Force. We have an email from Craig who writes, I live near Greenfield Lake. And from what I understand, Greenfield Lake used to be a water park in the early 1900s. Were alligators introduced from people's pets, or did they migrate there from other parts of the waterways? Is it a safety factor if someone falls out of their canoe or kayak? What are the most, lots of questions, dangerous times? Would they ever try to eradicate them there? I know they've removed larger gators from the lake in the past. Greenfield Lake Park is an interesting place, and it's one of the few places in the city of Wilmington that people can actually go and eyeball an alligator.
Right.
Kirk Mante, do you know how alligators arrived at Greenfield Lake Park?
I don't know. I bet there's some interesting stories around there. What we see certainly in areas of South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, especially right after the species was protected, is that a lot of Americans, especially American kids and teenagers in these areas, still had pet alligators. And as you saw alligators return to these habitats, especially abandoned ponds, that kind of thing, those ponds, as I'm sure Alan deals with on a regular basis at the commission, they become repositories for all kinds of pet turtles, pet alligators, pet caimans, all kinds of interesting individuals. So, I mean, you'd actually have to know a lot about the DNA of that population to understand whether or not they were imported, you know, from Florida or whether they actually came here naturally or there's some mixing, which is probably the most likely scenario.
How many different kinds of alligators are there in North America? Do we know? Is it just the American alligator that we're talking about here? Or Alan Boynton, go ahead.
There are two species of crocodilian in North America, the American crocodile and the American alligator. The American crocodile is a more of a brackish or saltwater species that lives far to the south, and so it's found in southern Florida. It's an endangered species, and that is why the federal government has continued protection of the American alligator as threatened due to similarity of appearance, so they can regulate trade in alligator skins and meat and closely so that American crocodiles aren't also traded.
What are the observable differences between American alligators and crocodiles?
Well, I think one of the most visible one is the shape of the snout on a crocodile is pointed, whereas an alligator is more rounded and blunt. And there are also some differences in the coloration.
And is one more dangerous than the other to humans?
That I do not know. I'm not that familiar with the behavior of American crocodiles, but certainly American alligators can be dangerous to humans. Normally, they are very shy and avoid humans. We're really more of a danger to them. But when they are fed, when they lose their fear of people, then they end up in proximity to people because they don't, you know, swim away. And that can set up a situation where someone is hurt, because alligators, although they look slow, when they're hunting, they can move very quickly.
We're talking about alligators in North Carolina with the chair of the newly formed Alligator Task Force, Alan Boynton. He is a wildlife diversity program officer with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. We also have Kirk Mante with us today, a habitat ecologist specializing in coastal wetlands. And if you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Other than Greenfield Lake Park, where in the Cape Fear region, and this is for either of you, where would people see alligators on a regular basis? Are we talking more Brunswick County, or do they show up in other places in the city of Wilmington? Where do we see them?
Oh, I believe New Hanover County and Brunswick, in areas that are being developed, that are close to wetland habitat, people have a good chance of seeing one at, like, golf courses, in ponds on golf courses, or in stormwater retention ponds associated with development. So these areas are attractive to alligators, and, of course, people are in that area, so that's a frequent interaction that people might have with alligators in that area.
You say alligators are shy, though, so do they pose a danger to humans, say, basking in the sun on a golf course, Kirk Mante?
I certainly say they could. It's very sometimes easy to be lulled into complacency with what looks to be a big, slow lizard, as Alan mentioned. But like most things in the world and with people and with nature, you don't know the history of any animal you may see. It may indeed be reactive to feeding or whatever else, and may be very interested in coming and taking a look. The big thing that I see as a big risk, which Alan mentioned briefly, is the fact that a lot of these wetlands on the coastline, Florida's dealing with this very largely right now, is about 1,000 people are moving to Florida a month now, and you're seeing, once again, massive landscape change. You have very kind of marginal wetlands and marginal uplands, and when human beings develop this land, we tend to kind of convert those marginal wetlands into ponds, into wetlands that hold more water, and then the areas that are dry, we like to make really dry so they don't flood. And that, in fact, is a great combination for alligators. So, I mean, the interesting thing is we're kind of taking, in some cases, pretty marginal habitat and turning it into perfect habitat for alligators and then putting people on it. So I think there's reason to believe that we'll see a lot more kind of conflicts in the future, particularly in areas where people think it's a interesting or entertaining thing to do to feed the alligators. But in general, this is something that all of us are going to have to get used to a little bit more when we visit the coast, when we have visitors visit us at the coast. We really need to take some care to let folks know that that alligators are with us, and in fact, we've kind of enabled them to come along as part of our landscape. And so we need to recognize that they're, you know, they can be dangerous, and we never know with, you know, when the alligator's having a lazy day or when it's really hungry. So it's something to bear in mind for sure.
Alan Boynton, are you seeing more interactions between people and alligators in southeastern North Carolina than in years past?
Yes, and I think that's just due to the increasing population of people and the increasing development of rural areas, so that people are closer to alligators. And this is something that we've been concerned with for some time, and not just for the conservation of alligators, but in 2007, the North Carolina legislature passed a law making the feeding of alligators illegal. So it is unlawful to intentionally feed alligators outside of captivity.
Although we know that happens all the time.
It does. It's kind of human nature, you know, to want to look at animals. People are very interested in all wildlife, including alligators. They want to get pictures of them. They want to see them, and they feel a need for some reason to take care of the alligator. Well, the alligators can take care of themselves, and it's when people get too close to alligators and alligators lose their fear of people and allow that approach that problems can occur.
How many known alligator attacks on humans do we have been recorded in North Carolina, Alan Boynton?
Well, I don't know of any serious incidents that resulted in severe injury or death. Certainly some people have been bitten on occasion, and this happens every, once every couple of years. So it's something that happens, and we've just been fortunate in that we haven't had an incident like happened in Florida earlier this year.
As you say, it's human nature to want to feed the wildlife. But you're saying, Alan Boynton, the North Carolina State Legislature had to pass a law, even though these are a federally protected species, there needed to be a state law to say, hey, feeding this species is illegal?
Yes.
Okay. And we've also heard there are resort communities like Baldhead Island, which is part of the North Carolina coast. There is, I believe, Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia, and they've started, I think, a class called Gatorology 101 to teach the public about why feeding alligators is really a bad idea, not just for their own safety. Kirk Mante, can you weigh in on that? What happens? What's the link when a person feeds an alligator? What does that create in the alligator?
Well, it's a very interesting question, and there's some biological processes that we don't totally understand because obviously we don't share language with alligators. But what we do know is Alan kind of referred to that most alligators and most crocodilians in general don't consider human beings to be a source of food, the Nile crocodile being a notable exception. And so as we kind of make vague or cloudy what the alligator considers human beings to be, and it considers us to be really a competitor, and as a result generally stays away. But when we provide it with food, it considers us a source of food, and they become at the very least, they become bold around us, and that's when you tend to see in areas like Florida and Louisiana, you see pets getting attacked and those kind of things, and children become a little bit at risk. And the more and more they get kind of confused about what their relationship with humans is supposed to be, as when you see more and more aggressive, you know, that we might, a lot of people listening to the show today might have seen the picture earlier this year of, I guess it was about a 15-foot alligator walking across the golf course, I think, right in town here, right near the South Carolina border. And so they're here, and we need to make clear that relationship.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about why North Carolina has recently formed an alligator task force, what we need to learn about these ancient creatures. After this 90-second break, we return for the final segment. We'll talk more about public safety, and it's your last chance to ask a question. 910-343-1138 is how you get in touch with us today, or coastline at whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline.
At 20 minutes before 1, you're listening to your public radio station, HQR News 91.3 FM. Following Coastline in 20 minutes, stay tuned for the State of Things.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and Drs. Hinahan, King, Kittinger, Sauer, Carney, Meyer, and Klein of Wilmington Gastroenterology, located at 5115 Oleander Drive. More at wilmingtongi.com. And from River Road Animal Hospital, now offering acupuncture as a complement to medication for conditions such as arthritis and chronic pain. 910-454-8910 or on Facebook.
This Thursday, WHQR's Community Advisory Board is hosting a WHQR meetup to bring public radio listeners together. Meetups are for all kinds of HQR fans and meet at different venues, from bottle shops and bars to waterfront parks. Tomorrow, join fellow listeners and the WHQR crew at the Bellamy Mansion on Market Street. Go to meetup.com for details. Search for WHQR to join and RSVP. HQR News Time is 19 minutes before 1.
You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're talking about alligators in North Carolina, why they're something of an elusive species for researchers, and what members of the public don't seem to understand, and what we need to learn to manage them sustainably. With us to answer your questions, Kirk Mante, habitat ecologist specializing in coastal wetlands, and Alan Boynton with the Wildlife Resources Commission, who is also the chair of the Alligator Task Force in the state. You have a few minutes left to ask your question. You can give us a call today at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we think about encountering alligators in more urban settings within the city limits, say, of Wilmington, Kirk Mante, what happens when you take a large alligator, say, out of a retention pond and bring him to another area with other alligators, say the Holly Shelter Game Preserve?
Well, that's a great question, actually. First of all, it's sometimes very complicated to move large animals. It's very, folks involved with bear and deer relocation and those kind of things already know this. Getting the animal safely, kind of sedated and safely onto a vehicle or a trailer where it can be moved, frequently results in the type of injury that means it's got to be euthanized anyway. So, I mean, typically the most common practice is to euthanize the animal where it's – and these are individual, usually large males that tend to be more aggressive and are used to people. But when they alligators, in fact, can be moved, and they're very similar to another very old species, the snapping turtle and the alligator snapping turtle in this. And then what they do is they perform an active kind of habitat scan. The problem with moving alligators and this kind of biology of doing a habitat scan is that they may not stay where you put them. If they deem we may say scientifically that we know exactly what represents ideal alligator habitat, but they may, in fact, arrive there and say that, well, that's not exactly what they're looking for, and then unless they're prevented from leaving, may, in fact, leave the area and search out for what they consider to be a better habitat. And, again, they're not flawless creatures with perfect ideation of what they need, but it's very hard to control. Unlike bears, they may not go back to where they were trapped, which is great. However, it's very difficult to keep them in one place.
Alan Boynton with the Wildlife Resources Commission. I spoke with another coastal scientist several weeks ago, and she said essentially if you take an alpha male alligator, relocate him to a place with other alligators, either he's going to die or another male alligator is going to die in that setting. And so you're actually not doing a very humane thing by trying to relocate the gator. What is the Wildlife Resources Commission position on that?
Well, we try to avoid moving alligators for several reasons, but of course sometimes we have to. Mm-hmm. The result could, I suppose, be as you just explained. It's also possible that the alligator that was moved will just leave. That certainly happens. We know of situations where large alligators have moved quite a distance, and this is why the caller or the guy that emailed about Greenfield Lake, and where those alligators came from, it's hard to say. It could have been native alligators that were moving into Greenfield. That the Greenfield Lake's not that far from the river, and on the creek there, and also, as Kirk explained, people release pets, and this includes small alligators, even though it's illegal to hold alligators in captivity.
Right, but I guess this scientist's contention was that if you relocate, and I'm not entirely sure she was talking only about male alligators, but in this context it was male alligators, it's a death sentence for either that gator or the weaker gator in the place where that gator is being put. Would you agree with that?
Well, no, I don't. Alligators can live in fairly dense populations. It depends a little bit on the time of year, and also, relative to the mating season, and also the amount of resources in the area.
And what do you mean when you say resources?
Food and space. So that moving alligator into a large riverine system might be different than in moving it into a swamp, with limited open water. So it depends a little bit on the situation and time of year. I would say that could happen, but it's not a certainty.
Under what circumstances would the Wildlife Resources Commission say that it's okay to pull an alligator out of, say, somebody's retention pond and move him?
Well, certainly if the animal's public safety risk. If we see that it is not scared of people and it's in an area where it's going to continue to come into close contact with people, then we would remove it. We try not to do that. The alligators in North Carolina exist in metapopulations, and by that I mean there are areas with a fair number of alligators that are actively breeding, and they may be separated from other alligators by some distance, and so we try not to move alligators between these populations. Sometimes we have to. It's an area that we need to do further research in to look at the genetic diversity of our alligator population. But as Kirk said, large alligators are difficult to move. So we can move fairly large alligators, but sometimes we just have to euthanize them.
We have someone who emailed. LJ asks, tell me about the presence or absence of alligators in the Cape Fear River. Alan Boynton, can you speak to that?
Well, we have alligators in the Cape Fear River and in the northeast Cape Fear River and for quite a distance up those rivers. Of course, there's the alligator, at the battleship, and that's on the river, but it's not the only alligator in the river.
And we've also seen cell phone video, these anecdotal stories and incidents of alligators playing in the surf. Well, playing is my own anthropomorphizing, I guess, of that. But they're surfing. They're crawling up on the beach. We know that they've been seen by paddle boarders in the Carolina Beach canals, the waterways around this area. Are those alligators, the ones on the beach, in the surf, and in the canals, are they a danger to humans, Kirk Mante?
Well, they certainly could be. Those frequently, though not always, are subadults or young adults that have been pushed out of whatever their favorite habitat may be. Or they may have been pushed out by land development or some other disturbance. The thing to remember, as Alan mentioned, is that over very short distances, the alligator is, in fact, one of the fastest animals on Earth. So, within about 30, 40, 50 feet is a really challenging place to be. So certainly in the middle of the summer, you do not want, a 6 or 8 or certainly a larger alligator washing up on the surf and for people to think that's something, curious, because it's not a shark. It's not something that's suffering on the beach. It's quite content and warm and may have just had a couple fish to eat. So it's a good thing to keep a distance. But they can survive in salt water, as the crocodile does, like Alan mentioned. But it's not their primary habitat. So it's usually an animal we want to keep people away from. And we want to take a close look at the animal in general to see, like, why it is there.
We haven't.
Rachel, I would also add that many times ponds behind the dune system can hold fresh water, and some of those ponds can be fairly good size. So alligators, as Kirk said, are not, you know, even though they can survive in salt water, they don't stay there long. But you may find them there on occasion, but they prefer fresh water. But sometimes they don't have to go far from the beach to find that.
We have an email from Tom who writes, I was surprised at how long it took for the Parks and Recreation Department to rebuild the boardwalk at Greenfield Lake and put up a safety rail. The alligators that float within a few feet of that boardwalk, in my opinion, are ready to attack anything, especially a small child that falls in the water. Months ago, when voicing my concerns to the Parks and Rec Department, I was told it's never happened there, so should be of little concern. And he asks just how many alligator attacks have been recorded in North Carolina in, say, the last 20 years. And Alan Boynton, we asked that question earlier, and didn't you say there are zero fatal attacks that you know of?
Yes, but that certainly doesn't mean one could not happen.
And what is the likelihood of, when you think about Greenfield Lake and all the families and little kids that run around in that area feeding the ducks and the geese, and the gators that are present there, and then you think about this two-year-old at the Disney Resort that was killed by an alligator in June, and this was after other tourists, it turns out, had warned park employees about the presence of gators and some large gators. Do we need to be paying closer attention to this?
Well, my guess is that the park, I don't know the park managers personally, but my guess is that they're very aware of the alligators and their behavior. So, and we work or would work with them to remove alligators that they believe are a threat to people. We really depend on the property manager to contact us, and we'd be glad to look at situations, any particular situation there or anywhere, to determine whether or not a particular alligator is a threat. But because, as we mentioned before, because alligators can move long distances, and Greenfield Lake is fairly close to the river and on a creek and all, it would be difficult to, you know, remove all alligators from Greenfield Lake forever.
And I believe there are signs up warning about. Yes, and I think that there are signs saying don't swim in Greenfield Lake, and there was a drunk guy who jumped in the lake several years ago and got attacked, and he's fine from what I understand, and it was a drunk episode. But this person writes, people have been swimming and tubing the Black River and South River in Sampson and Bladen counties since forever. Are people in danger to continue to do so there, Alan?
Well, you know, Florida has a very large alligator population. Their estimate of their alligator population is about 1 million alligators. They have a lot of wetlands and, of course, a lot of people, and they have incidents where people have died and or been hurt sometimes when swimming. Of course, this child that was killed was not swimming, but it can certainly happen. But because of the low number of alligators in North Carolina, the risk is not high, and I suppose that's, you know, why we haven't seen that happen here.
And we have Charles from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline, Charles. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for the show. I have a business here at Cape Fear Rivet Ventures, and I take quite a few people out during the year, different times to see gators and talk about the gators, and I've also been around Greenfield Lake. I've seen the people feeding them there. And in the Orton Lake, beside the road, people feed them right beside the sign that says unlawful to feed alligators. So I find gators in the river that are really scared. We have to be really quiet to really get a good look at them. They really want to be back in the water. And I just keep seeing the problem with the gators are the people. I love to see the gators in the spring. I've heard them roar. I've seen them do their mating vibratory thing in the water, which is really rare. And I really like the gators. And there are a lot of gators. I can go out in the evening, in the spring particularly, and see 100 alligators in the river.
And when you're in a canoe, is it a canoe that you're in, Charles?
No, I have a 24-foot Carolina skiff that I take people out in on the river. We do canoe, kayak through the Three Sisters a lot in the Black River. And I've lived in Florida. I've been to Okeechobee. I've been to the Okefenokee Swamp, seen hundreds of alligators together in the up against the dam of the Okefenokee. So they're a wild animal. You know, when they get loose, the fear of people, there's a problem. And one of the largest alligators I've ever seen is on the Black River, has been on the Black River.
Okay, we're running out of time, Charles.
Okay, so,
but your main comment is don't feed the alligators, because that's what's really creating the issue here.
Don't feed the alligators.
Yes.
It's just a dangerous thing. And glad we have them here. Thanks for the show.
Thank you so much for your call, Charles. Before we end, I'd like to hear from both of you, if you could get one point across to the general public about what they really need to understand. What's the missing piece when it comes to public safety and dealing with alligators now that humans and gators are crossing paths more often? Alan Boynton, what would you have people remember?
Do not feed alligators and keep your distance from them.
Okay. Kirk Mante.
I think I'd echo that, too. One of the things that I think is really important as we become a ever more mobile culture, et cetera, is that when you've got people visiting you here on the coast, make them aware of the issues, too. Make them aware that there are alligators here and that we've all got to share the space together.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Alan Boynton, Kirk Mante, thank you both so much for joining us today. Coastline airs Wednesdays only through the month of August. In September, we fire up the Thursday Coastline once again in time for political coverage. Coastline's executive producer and today's phone screener is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.